episode 46. My name is Dave Hunt, and I'm joined by Michael Swick.
How's it going, Dave? We have stuff to talk about today. It's fun.
we have a show that has news. We are Digital Days Gaming. We are a weekly podcast that covers all platforms of gaming. We release every Thursday morning at 6 a.m. on the podcast services, and we also live stream on Twitch, twitch.tv/digitaldaysgaming. And we are also on YouTube, and we now are officially youtube.com/digitaldaysgaming. Thanks to all of you for subscribing to that. We have that private URL now, or unique URL. So that is a super easy thing now. That instead of just telling people to search for it, we can actually just link them to it. And then the link doesn't like isn't like four lines on Twitter.
Yes. Something simple. So, our name's kind of long, but yeah, that we knew going into it, it's going to be that way.
Yeah. So we should have gone after DDG, but I'm sure somebody has that.
Yeah, I think so.
Again, huge thank you to the community for getting us over that 100 subscriber threshold on YouTube. We're going to try to do a little bit more stuff on YouTube. I got a couple emails this week about even more hardware that's coming my way. So that'll be more unboxing, which the unboxing videos have done really well. So we have that going for us as well. Like we mentioned, we are live on Twitch. It's been pretty consistently Monday nights. Sometimes it's Sunday nights, but typically Sunday or Monday night around 9 o'clock Eastern. We do live stream the show, and then you can also support us on Patreon, patreon.com/digitaldaysgaming. And then all of the other Facebook groups, Discord, social stuff is all in your show notes or on our website, digitaldaysgaming.com. So that is where you can find all that stuff. Please share the show, leave a review, make a flyer, put it on your neighbor's door for us. Like, any of that stuff would be greatly appreciated, just to get more eyes on the show and ears as well. As we're especially going into next gen, people might be looking for information or wanting to know things, and this might be a really good resource if you think it is. Tell your friends about us and share it on Facebook and retweet it on the Twitterverse.
You think we're trash, just be like, hey, listen to these assholes talk about video games. We'll take that download.
Listen to these stupid people ramble about stuff that they claim that they know stuff about, but they don't know anything about.
Yes, yes. I mean, the internet has plenty of those people. We're just two more. It's fine.
All right. So we are going to jump right into it. And we had a Ubisoft Forward last week for the month of September.
Yep. And as tradition, when there's a Ubisoft Forward, there's a Ubisoft apology. This one was for completely different things. And for some reason, they couldn't edit it into their video. But we won't talk about that. Shame on you, Ubisoft. We'll talk about the things they did announce. Not the biggest Ubisoft Forward. At least I didn't walk away from it being like, hell yeah, they announced a bunch of stuff. Though they announced one thing that I really, really loved. The three highlights, I guess four, but we'll talk about the fourth one a little after. First one is Prince of Persia, Sands of Time. This game from 2003. That is being remade from the ground up, I believe, is what they were saying. And that is going to be January 21st on all the consoles. Do you have any history with the Prince of Persia franchise? I've dabbled in them, but like, there was always a game I would game fly or something, and I would never finish.
The only like Prince of Persia like memories that I have is like that side scrolling, playing the demo at like Office Depot when my dad was like shopping for computers.
Your Office Depot had game demos?
Or the computers, like that was like you could play the find a game on the computer display, whether, you know, because I didn't want to play solitaire or Minesweeper or whatever, or, you know, just like just trying to kill time. I remember that being there, and it was just more or less the side scrolling, jump across the pits and not let the concrete crumble below you. That's really like the only memories I have with it. A good friend of mine, Johnny Cologne, he's been playing the one of them on Game Pass or on his Xbox. He's been streaming it pretty constantly, the one that's in the 4x3 aspect, which still, even to this day, like, it's just hard to, when I see it right away, I'm almost like, I'm taken aback by looking at a 4x3 aspect ratio.
Snob.
It looks weird on my phone.
And the thing I was excited for, Scott Pilgrim versus the World Complete Edition is coming holiday to PS4, Xbox One, Switch. I don't know if they mentioned new consoles, but it's coming out.
I'm sure it's just going to work.
Yeah, it's just going to work. This is exciting because this game was taken off the store several years ago because of a license with Universal, who owns the rights to the movies, that just expired. The author of the books is a real big fan of the game. Obviously, it was made, it's based on his book. So he's been like demanding this game get released again. He's been like pestering Ubisoft on Twitter for a couple months now, along with the director of the movie. So everyone's been kind of on Ubisoft to just re-release this. So glad they were able to do it, because it's one of those things where it's licensed either, you know, through the studio, probably the, you know, the author of the studio, all this stuff has to get licensed out and sorted. Ubisoft was able to sort it. They'll re-release it. It'll come with the DLC and multiplayer stuff. I'm so happy. I love Scott Pilgrim. Scott Pilgrim has been my Twitter avatar since I've had a Twitter account. Like, I am super excited to get these games again. And this just made me happy. This is like the only thing that I wanted from Ubisoft Forward is this announcement, and they delivered it. I'm excited. It's a great side scroller. Anamanaguchi did the soundtrack.
It looked a little better than are they cleaning it up, or is it just how it looked?
That's just how it looked. So they might have upped the resolution that helped significantly with that, but like from the most part, that game just looked that good when they had it. So it's just probably running at a smoother frame rate, higher resolution.
Yeah, comparing the two games, I mean, they got a lot of crap about Prince of Persia's graphics for a remake, and you know, obviously Scott Pilgrim's is coming out like a month earlier, or 1 or 2 months earlier, because it's coming out holiday 2020, and Prince of Persia is coming out in January. I have a feeling that Prince of Persia is going to get delayed.
I do too. It doesn't look great, especially. People have been really knocking remakes out of the park lately, and this is Ubisoft's first real attempt at doing a remake, and this one doesn't look great. So yeah, but Scott Pilgrim is a simple game, so I'm not surprised that they're able to get this up and running and have it look as good as it does. And then we had Rider Republic. Looks like it's from the developers of Steep, and this is like a multiplayer extreme sports game. Weird presentation, but it looked good. Like, it could be fun. I feel like Ubisoft has been trying to chase like some multiplayer sports games with Steep, or what is their Cars game called?
The Crew.
Like, they've been trying for a while now, and they hopefully,
I feel
this
like they almost all like certain ones of their games are like obviously like popular in terms of selling units. Like when you look at The Division, or you look at you know, even the Rabbit series that they do, and some of the other, like their Far Cry franchises, like they have these franchises that sell, and then they have these franchises that they support almost no matter what, whether it's Rainbow Six or it's what they were doing with Steep for as long as they were. Like, Steep's got, like, you know, Olympic expansions and you know, extreme expansions, and I think that there's just this audience that they're carving out. We'll talk about it a little bit at the end of this news thing, but that they aren't as concerned with the quantity of what they're releasing as much as they are of the trying to cover all of the bases at the same time as a publisher. So like they have a lot of things, you know, going all at the same time, and a lot of people think it hurts them, but I mean, this strategy has proven to work for them for multiple years, that they haven't really had to, whether you think that their games are all the same or not,
they are.
They still hit this niche for enough to warrant it. I mean, the amount of money they've been making off Just Dance for how long? So I think that they are a company that can take a little bit more risk, because they do have a little bit more of a safety net of money built versus, you know, like you're not going to hear like you heard that stuff about like the hostile takeover that was trying to happen before at one point in time. And they obviously had enough cash to stop that. And, you know, the other stuff that as much as they as a company, sometimes they get dragged through the mud, whether it's PR or just the allegations that they've had this summer. But at the end of it, like come November, like people are going to buy Watch Dogs. They're going to buy Assassin's Creed. They're going to buy Far Cry. They're going to get these games, and they've got a stellar lineup. And every year they move up higher and higher in terms of a marquee publisher in the gaming world.
Well, I feel like they're on the same course that we saw with Activision, where Activision was just making the same Call of Duty over and over again, and people were like, this is going to be the Call of Duty that breaks the franchise, but it still sold enough copies. The people that were celebrating it, or the people that were really loud about it, weren't the actual core audience for that, and I think that's the same thing with Ubisoft, where I think the Ubisoft games are boring. I think they're all the same. I used to be a fan of them, and I think they're boring now, and they're all the same, but they still sell. I'm just louder than the people that are enjoying the games.
Yeah. And see, I look at its core, like, as like we can talk like a Far Cry versus Watch Dogs, and they're open world, you know, move around and go as you please. But like for me, it's first person versus third person, which is almost enough to that I don't feel like I'm playing Watch Dogs Far Cry Edition or
and
Far Cry
me,
Watch Dogs Edition.
It's the thing that you're doing, and it's always go to tower, go to base, take over tower, take over base. Mm-hmm. More stuff opens up and rinse and repeat. But there's nothing wrong with that mechanic. It's just I think last year was the point everyone had where they just couldn't play three games last year.
Sure. And they've come out and said that they're, you know, completely redoing their narrative team. And, you know, like even years ago when I covered like Far Cry 5, we had conversations about, because like I remember like the first time I pulled up the Far Cry 5 map at a preview of event, like I had Division feelings all over, mm-hmm. you know, but. You know, obviously, like those, you know, again, those are somewhat different games. But at the same time, like, I don't blame them. They own all these studios to use, like, the assets that they know already are working as long as they can incorporate them into something. Like, and I'm not, you know, drone versus eagle versus, you know, robotic pet. Like, you know, it's all, you know, different.
But I think that's why they're going on the Activision thing where people are like, oh, what is Call of Duty going to do? And then it's like, oh, Black Ops 4. You know, we're gonna have blackout mode, and that turned into Warzone. I think we're gonna see that in Ubisoft earlier this year. You know, announced shakeups and changes that weren't related to allegations, that they were gonna like change things. So they were already on that path to change things, and I think it's gonna be changed even more so after they like got rid of all the bad apples.
And the game that we haven't talked about, I think, is them kind of going in that direction a little bit with Immortals: Fenyx Rising. It's a new IP. It's is it a Breath of the Wild clone?
Yes.
Probably.
Yes.
It's the same.
But that's not bad.
It's the same developer that did Assassin's Creed Odyssey, Ubisoft Quebec. And there, if you guys haven't listened to it or seen it, there's a video on YouTube with my impressions on it over gameplay, and then the audio feed is on the podcast feed for I got to play that over a remote connection, very similar to what Michael did with Watch Dogs a couple months ago. And it was fun. Like, if you haven't had a chance to listen to it, like, go check it out. Yeah, there is a ton of the Breath of the Wild vibes in there, but I think I said in my impressions, like, the combat is more fluid and much better. Like, just much, much better. So, and that comes out December 3rd, and that's the game that was formerly known as Gods and Monsters, which even in a 90-second trailer that they showed at the end of E3 2019 for Gods and Monsters, everybody got Zelda vibes from that right away.
Yes. So, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, games do that all the time. Like,
mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you always hear the story of Uncharted ripped off Tomb Raider, Tomb Raider ripped off Uncharted.
Yeah. it's not the worst thing in the world when something is like a blatant might be too harsh, but you got those vibes immediately from it, and then some of the previews pretty much said like, yeah, this is what it's going to be. Here's how it's different, but at its core, it's going to have things you're familiar
with. Yeah, I mean, people are calling it Greek Zelda, and if you're going to tell me that I get to play a Zelda game in the Greek mythology world, like, sign me up.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. There's nothing wrong with, you know, some iteration, and, you know, Ubisoft's good with Nintendo, so I'm sure Nintendo's fine.
But now, like, we talk, like, it came up on the Facebook group, you know, like, Kyle brought it up a little bit in the group of, okay, so end of October, you have Watch Dogs Legion. Middle of November, you have Assassin's Creed Valhalla. December, you have Immortals: Fenyx Rising. January, you might have Prince of Persia. And then, like, February, you have Far Cry 6. Is that too many, like you had mentioned, like, without removing Prince of Persia from that, that is essentially one quote-unquote open-world RPG-style game a month from October to February.
Yeah, that's probably going to be too much, though there's not a lot of games coming out for these consoles, so I'm wondering if Ubisoft is just banking on the fact that they're going to be really just competing with Cyberpunk and themselves this holiday. Mm-hmm.
And I still feel like gameplay-wise, like I mentioned earlier, like, I will get a different feel playing Far Cry 6 than I would playing Watch Dogs.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I feel like you'll get a different feel from, like, Assassin's Creed compared to either one of those games, just because you'll be doing the same mechanics over and over again, but at least it's like, hey, sword fighting or axe fighting, you know, and gunplay. Mm-hmm. But I think, me personally, I'm only going to probably pick up one of those games because I know I will get tired by the time the second game comes out. So I'll probably get Watch Dogs and just ignore the rest. But I'm going to have new consoles and I'm going to need shit to play for it. And there's not a lot going for it. So they might be able to get away with it, though. I think Far Cry will slip based on the success of Watch Dogs and Assassin's Creed. Because I feel like Far Cry is just listed there for the financial year to end.
Typically, the Far Cry games come out in February anyways.
Yeah, but I feel like you put it there now, so then investors are happy. But then if Assassin's Creed and Watch Dogs sell so well, you can probably get away with being like, all right, let's put a little bit more work into Far Cry. Or if something goes wrong with either one of those games,
Far Cry can easily just
delay it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because like you can look at Far Cry 5 and Far Cry 4. A huge PC audience as well, but in overall MPDs at the end of the year, like Far Cry is always in the top five whenever it comes out. Always.
Yeah. It ends up in maybe not top five, but like top 10. Yeah, for sure.
For all the platforms, usually it ends up like, maybe top 10, but I mean, it's up there usually. And I'm always, cause like people like that game, that name carries significant weight on the shelves for players, more weight. I would argue more weight than Assassin's Creed.
I would disagree with that, but we'll just agree to disagree on that.
I think just based on whenever I see it on the MPDs, but we'd have to go back and look whatever Assassin's Creed Odyssey came out. Because I think what usually happens, too, is with Far Cry releasing in February, it has the whole year to rank up there. When Assassin's Creed comes out in October or November, it only has like 3 months to stay in that 2020 or 2018 realm.
Yeah, and then that's a fair point.
So, I mean, and that helps, though, when people are looking at, like, best-selling games, when they're looking at it in, like, October, November, and they see something, like, GTA has always been on there, Minecraft's always been on there. Like, those, like, that seems to carry, weight for people's purchasing thoughts. So, but, please check out the Immortals content on YouTube and on the podcast feed. Let me know what you guys think. Feedback is always appreciated. So, but overall, I mean, if this Nintendo Direct style system that I think Ubisoft's doing, if they do something like this like every 90 days, I don't think this is bad.
They can consistently push this stuff out because stuff still wasn't there. We still haven't got our Splinter Cell announcement. They keep fucking throwing
Sam Rainbow Fisher. Six.
Yeah, they keep throwing him in other things, which I think is just them engaging just to see how much the community actually gives a shit about Sam Fisher. Mm-hmm. Because he's been in Wildlands. I think he was in Wildlands. He's in that mobile game. Now he's in this. I think they're just trying to see how much they can pimp this character around and get people really demanding. So next year at E3, when they're like, here's our Splinter Cell game, people can go crazy because it's, highly anticipated. And you introduce Sam Fisher to whole new audiences. Mm-hmm. The Rainbow Six audience, a lot of them probably have no idea who Sam Fisher is. They will know now. Hopefully he's cool in that game. And then when he announces his own game, people are going to be like, oh shit, that's that Rainbow Six Siege character and he's got his own game.
Do you think that maybe they had something close and then this narrative shakeup changed that? Like, because they were looking at it or the focus groups were telling them this feels like Far Cry Sam Fisher?
I could see that. Or with all the people that they've had to kick out because of all the abuse and allegations, I can see any one of those people having maybe a Splinter Cell thing like on the docket of like, here's the next thing we do. So I wouldn't be surprised if a Splinter Cell game in the last year or so was in development and either the shakeups or the firings led to them having to put that on hold. And then this is just like a holdover of just like, well, let's just put them in Rainbow Six.
Yeah, because then speaking of Rainbow Six, like we didn't see anything about Rainbow Six Quarantine, which is supposed to be their PvE game.
Because they got to rename that game. They have to. They can't release Rainbow Six Quarantine in 2021, probably 2022. Like they have to rename that game. I don't know what you name that. Like Infection sounds bad. Like I don't know like what you do for that.
And I feel like that they're kind of at the point where they announced some new gameplay or new game mode in Division 2, like this 100 floor, it's called the Summit, like this 100 floor horde mode, boss every 10 floors. It's something I probably should go back and check out, but that wasn't even in the Ubisoft Forward, so I kind of have a feeling that they might, as much as I don't know if people want it, they might kind of be already like, on the Division 3 train, like getting ready to do a third version of the game and make it probably next gen only.
Yeah, I could see them just moving on from it, just because at a certain point, like it's already been a year. There's only so much they can do for that game. We also didn't see any Beyond Good and Evil. Skull and
Bones.
That
lives its own bubble. And then that guy, yeah, so like we didn't see any Beyond, but they live, like they're attached to Ubisoft, but I feel like they're just their own company. Even when we saw them at like PR stuff, they're like, they're over there.
Like, yeah, yeah, but still, like something would have been nice. But and then we didn't see Skull and Bones, so Skull and Bones had like its own announcement afterwards or before that just confirmed the stuff we reported on a couple months ago of just like, hey,
it still exists
been rebooted
and it's being retooled. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's still stuff Ubisoft can have for like one more. I don't think they do one more this year. I think they start next year.
I think, yeah, I don't think we see one until January. So
yeah, they got
January. We'll have a deeper dive in January, or it'll be late December. January or late December, we'll have the deeper dive into Far Cry 6.
Yeah.
If Division 3 is a thing, I think you'll start seeing some discussion about that then. Like you said, getting their end of the year quotas up, of like putting their little carrots out of like, here's what we're gonna do, so please just keep investing in us, like rightfully so.
Use those gift cards you got during the holidays on these old games that are on sale now. But yeah, that was it for Ubisoft Forward. So decent show, nothing crazy. I still gotta get used to the fact that we're now in a world that we're just like every publisher has their own show. They get the mark down what they're doing.
I'm okay with it. Yeah, like I'm totally okay with it because, you know, you'd always like we always talked about like that Monday of E3 when there's like three or four press conferences going, or in that 36-hour period of like, you know, Bethesda Sunday night to Sony Monday night. There's always so much information. And now like it's like, okay, well, you get this, like Ubisoft gets theirs, Xbox gets theirs, PlayStation gets theirs, you know, and they get to kind of control the messaging for, you know, even if it's just for 2 or 3 days, like independently.
Yeah, it's just I miss the chaos, but I can get used to this because, hey, it gives us stuff to talk about week to week if they keep doing this. All right, next news story. I just put it in there just so we can talk a little shit. A couple weeks ago, 505 Games announced that the owners of Control on current gen consoles, or owners of the Deluxe Edition on current consoles, will not be able to upgrade for free to the new consoles. They will have to buy the Ultimate Edition for $40. And they said there was a bunch of technical reasons why this was impossible for them to do, and it was just too much work for them to upgrade a year-old game. They need people to just buy a new version of it. So flash forward to a couple days ago from when they made that announcement, and they accidentally upgraded everyone that owns the Deluxe Edition to the Ultimate Edition, and then several hours later revoked that and was hoping no one noticed. And of course a bunch of people noticed when their games updated to the Ultimate Edition on whatever console or PC they or storefront they were using. So they haven't really announced, or they haven't really come out with a statement or anything like that. They're kind of just hoping this goes under the radar, and I haven't seen too many places reporting on it. There's definitely been some sites, but it seems like this kind of went under the radar for everybody. But holy shit, do I feel bad for Remedy, because I know they probably have no control over this, because 505 Games is publishing and is in charge of the IP. But damn, this must suck, because it just looks terrible.
Yeah, like at this point in time, if that happened, and so you just kind of let it happen, it's the same thing like when a pricing error happens, when somebody like doesn't put the decimal point in the right spot, and you get to buy the game, and Amazon doesn't sit there and when they sell a game for $4.99 instead of $59.99, they don't, and you purchase it, they don't, you know, after it ships out, they don't sit there and charge you the extra $50. Yeah. They're just like, all right, what happened? Like, I think, actually, I was looking at it the other day. Like, I think I have a pre-order for Watch Dogs Legion for, like, $34 from, like, a pricing error.
Yeah, yeah. You're locked in. And especially, like, the fact that they revoked it sucks. But at this point, it's not, there's no technical reason why they can't do this. And now we know that there's no, because their whole point is, like, oh, we, you know, it's hard to patch all those different versions of the game. It's like, no, apparently it's not. I almost feel like they need to, I feel like they've been silent, and I hope that they come out and are just like, all right, we're just upgrading everyone. Sorry. We figured out a way to do this.
I mean, this is almost as bad as when Sony was like, well, crossplay doesn't work, and Epic's like, oh, yeah, watch.
Yeah. Rocket League's like, oh, we hit a button accidentally. Sorry, guys. Yeah, this definitely looks bad. Like, I almost wish 505 would have just, like, silently just upgraded everybody, and then they probably would have looked like heroes if they would have just let this accidentally happen, and then they're just like, okay, let's not make an announcement. Let's just upgrade everybody. And then when people realize it, we'll put out a tweet being like, surprise, check your console. But instead, they're just going to ignore it, and it just seems real shitty. And I feel bad for Remedy, because I feel like they're almost the victim.
This is 505, not Remedy.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like a lot of people that are angry about this are probably pointing, you know, their pitchforks at Remedy, because that's the name you associate with this game. But in reality, it's the publishers making the call on all of that stuff. So, yeah, just a little talking a little shit about how that worked out. But I want to get into the main thing, the thing that we are the most excited about talking about.
I don't want to talk about this.
Oh, you don't? Okay. Well, I mean, you did get a lot in the Facebook group out, so it makes sense. Dave was very active that day. So, Xbox Series S, not X, that leaked out like at like 1 a.m.
It was like 1 a.m. for you, but it was like 11 o'clock in the morning or 11 p.m. like Microsoft time.
Yeah,
like something like super super late.
So images leaked out of the Xbox Series X, which is like half the size of the Xbox Series X, and Microsoft, within like a good 12-hour period, went from like funny memes to like, all right, open the floodgates. Xbox Series S is real. The Xbox Lockhart is real. And it is a $300 console that will come out November 10th. And like, what else is there to say? Like, this is like a super aggressive.
Yeah. So like, it's non-4K, no discs.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, 100, it can still do like the allegedly do the 120 frames, 1080p. And yeah, it's, you know, it's a very, very aggressive box, like a aggressively priced box.
It we is are basically
finding it's an Xbox
par.
One X.
Yeah, it's an Xbox One X, a little bit more powerful with that because it has the SSD technology and it has a better GPU, CPU. But like, this is a very aggressive mid-step, or I don't even know what you call this, but it is very
if you don't own a 4K television and you don't plan to get a 4K television in the next 2 to 3 years, this is your console if you want an Xbox.
Even then, if you're on a budget and you have a 4K TV, this is your console. Like,
yeah,
This is a
Game Pass box.
Yes, this is exactly that. This is to undercut Sony, undercut themselves, really, and get people into their ecosystem targeting 1080p, 120 frames. 120 frames seems like bullshit to me. I'm waiting to see a console do 60 frames. But as someone who has a 4K TV, I only give a shit about 1080p and 60 frames per second. So this is perfect
You want the consistent. Do you want to be at 4K and then have your frame rate go up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down? Or do you want to be at 1080p and have a smooth frame rate? So it's very, very fascinating. And on top of it, they also they priced the Series X as well at $499.99, which is the number that everybody was saying that they think that it was, you know, like the acceptable price. And they also, you know, we had talked about this a couple months ago. I looked into this, but they doubled down on Xbox All Access as well.
Yes.
With this. And so if you want to get a Series S, you can sign up for All Access, and it's 24 months at $25 a month, or you can get the Series X version at $35 a month.
And that includes Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, which is Game Pass for your console, Game Pass for your PC, Project xCloud for your phone, and Xbox Live Arcade. Like, it's a crazy aggressive deal that they're trying for this. And you'll see an upgrade. Like, it's only 4 teraflops, but that's still more than the current consoles have. So you're going to see an upgrade from this generation to the next generation by getting an S. Like, I'm really impressed by what they did. And it's also smaller. Like, the new consoles are so fucking big. And this one is this nice, sleek, little, tiny boombox Bluetooth speaker-looking thing that I'm just, like, super impressed. And, like, I was talking to you, Dave. I'm like, shit, I might end up getting both. you know, getting a PS5 and then getting this on Xbox All Access just so I can have a Game Pass machine that isn't my PC.
Mm-hmm.
And the
caveat to that, the reason that that's also always a viable option is because there are more games on console than on console Game Pass than on PC Game Pass. So, yeah. You know, there's always that caveat of like to give it a little bit better of an aspect. And if you don't think that Game Pass carries significant weight in the gaming world right now, I just think you're blind.
And even if it's not like the hottest thing now, but which it's starting to get really hot, it will be a big deal when everyone that buys the new console is bought into the system, you know, because that's
when the studios that they acquired really start, you know, when Hellblade 2 comes out and when, you know, Double Fine's next cool game comes out and then people are looking at it and they start realizing like the advertising of the game and you see the game advertised and then you see it say Game Pass like that, yeah. You know, that's the significant part of it.
And then a couple days after this news got out, they said they signed a deal to bring EA Play to Xbox Game Pass, which means the sports games from EA are coming.
You get the discount, you get the 10-day early access, but you don't get access to like Madden 21.
But you get access to the old ones.
Correct.
You
get a discount on the current games as well. It's like, I think it's like $10 or almost like just another notch on the Game Pass belt of a thing to have. Like, or if you spend $15 and I mean, we've always talked about it. Like if you play in 1 year time span, if you play and complete 3 games on Game Pass, it's paid for itself.
Yes. And
so
you basically use Game Pass as like a demo thing. That's what I've been doing. Like anytime I'm like, oh, I want to buy this game on Switch. And it's like, oh, this indie game is also on Game Pass. So let me try it there before I pick it up on a Switch. The EA thing I think is great just because those trials are, I think, a big deal, you know, for the EA sports games and all that stuff, you know, because the EA Play does have that trial.
It's going to keep these game servers alive longer. Everybody talks about like servers being shut down. Like, so Battlefield 4's servers will get a surge from Game Pass members that are like, oh, I can play Battlefield 4? Like, that's a pretty big deal. I can play the old Madden. Oh, I can play, you know, like Mirror's Edge. I can play, you know, Unraveled. Like, not that those games have any servers to them, but this will influence life into them. Or, like, check out Battlefield 5 before this next Battlefield comes out or whatever else is on there. Like, there's a ton of, you know, even though they're older games that give it, you know, can give it a second life and people can remember like how fun the game was, along with the possibilities of cross-platform play coming along for them, Microsoft, to continue to put themselves in this position of just building their platform. You know, like that's significant because like Apex and, you know, I know Apex is free to play already, but in terms of just, it'll be kind of one of those things where you're there, you're in the Game Pass store and you see Apex and you're just going to, you know, gravitate to playing it there.
Yeah, it's just going to bring you into the EA ecosystem. Or if you have EA Play on Xbox and you don't have Game Pass, you're probably going to then shift to Game Pass just so you can get it, because you would be kind of silly not to, even though you're paying a little bit extra money. Mm-hmm. Like financially speaking, like you'd want, this is another reason to bring people into Game Pass. And I know we talk about Game Pass a lot, and you know, we're PlayStation fans probably first in terms of like the console hierarchy, but this is a hell of a good deal. I mean, Dave's probably going to be looking into upgrading his newly bought Xbox One into a Series S or a Series X.
We'll see. I mean, I don't necessarily feel like I have to, but I mean, if the opportunity is correct, if a company is offering the correct trade-in value for me, like it'll definitely be something that I have to pay attention to, just to build up the possibility and to look into the upgrade platforms a little bit, because I feel like, again, like we just talked about, like you could, you know, get the S, like they're, whether you like it or don't like it is irrelevant. It's worked. They're kind of going the cell phone contract plan route with All Access.
Many people are used to.
Correct. So here you know, like for me, I could see myself in November of 2020 doing Xbox All Access, $25 a month for the Series S. And then, you know, like next year, like I've been talking to Ben Palmer, he's a good friend of mine, you start to see the 4K TV market level off in 2021 after CES. Like they start announcing some of the 8K stuff and all these other TVs and the, you know, the 104-inch TV that's bent curved. You know, like, and then you start seeing what I would want is like a 45 or 50-inch, you know, 4K, you know, I don't know, LCD plasma, I don't know, a pretty looking TV, and you know, like, and I'll get that for a good price point in mid 2021, you know, end of 2021, and then I'll start being, you know, near the possibility of, okay, now I can think about upgrading to a Series X as the library from Microsoft increases as well, and as they get more used to developing on the Series consoles.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, everything is kind of, like, lining up.
And this, it's had a price point, the Series S, that we were worried about, you know, like, the current gen holding it back with, you know, games having to work across all generations. But the way they are pricing the Series S, they might get a lot of people to move sooner rather than later. And the way the hardware is built with the Series S, it's basically the same hardware that's in the new console, just slightly less. But the architecture is there, so now we're basically just looking at when you play on a PC and you have the ability to play at low settings, mid settings, high settings, ultra settings, you're going to see that in terms of like that, but with physical hardware, in terms of like the S will be the low and mid settings of any new game coming to the Xbox Series X. Mm-hmm. And the Series X are going to be the high and ultra settings. So they built the hardware to a point where, like, you're not going to have to worry about, or hopefully not, but I don't feel you will have to worry about the hardware being held back by this lower end machine in their ecosystem. You know, they retire the Xbox One.
Correct.
Like, you'll be fine because the architecture is there. It's not drastically different. It's just the low and mid settings for
this. This also makes sense for them discontinuing the all digital Xbox One.
Yes, this makes perfect sense. And then I don't know if we mentioned it, but they have claimed November 10th as the release date for the Series S and Series X, which is a Tuesday, which throws away. I still think Sony's going to take a Friday. I'm still kind of shocked that they took a Tuesday, but that's just, they want to do
all
that.
Right, so let's briefly talk about this, because now we know that Sony has come out and said on the 15th.
Wednesday, the 16th.
The 16th, that they're going to have a PS5 showcase event where we believe that we'll see. We have to. So
a 40-minute showcase.
That, yeah,
they have to.
We're hoping that they give us price, date, and pre-order date. Pre-orders for the Xbox are September 22nd, by the way.
Yes.
So now, let's get a, I don't want to, you know, because by the time most of you are listening to this, this has already happened. So we talked about this earlier. We don't necessarily want to sound terrible or rehashing something, you know, because most of you are listening to this on Thursday. Only a few of you are on Twitch live right now. So first question I have to get out of the way is, Sony does not have a $300 counter to this, right?
No, they do not. But I know what I feel like I know what they're going to do.
Okay. I said it on Twitter and in the Facebook group, and I'm still standing by it, is that I feel that the disc-based PS5 will cost more than the Series X. And I think that that might only be $25 or $50 more. So I agree, just before you say anything, I agree, like a $499 or a $399 or, God forbid, a $599 price point in terms of like the retail world of where you price things. That sounds correct. And I think that this will be in the $530 to $550 range for the disc-based PS5.
So I disagree, just because the tech that is in the PlayStation 5 is nowhere near the tech that is in the Series X. The Series X is the one.
The last comparison that I saw, the only difference I really saw was like 4 teraflops.
And it's not even 4 teraflops. That's like higher than, it's like 2 and a half or something.
Right. But the only difference I saw was teraflops. GPUs and CPUs are almost identical or the same.
Yeah, but in terms of like what they're doing, I mean, the only thing that can raise up the PlayStation 5 price is their new cooling system that they're doing, which apparently took a lot of R&D for them to figure out.
So here's where everything's coming from my standpoint. And I talked about this at length in the Facebook group, you know, rightfully so or not rightfully so, I went into it. So rumors are that it costs $450 to make this console.
Yes.
If you want to remove the disc for the digital version, it's $17. So yes, it's still $450. So do I think that they can sell the console at a loss? Yes.
They always do. Every
Do I think they're going to sell both consoles at a loss? No. So if And I also think there needs, and you and I agree on this, I believe, that there needs to be a significant price difference between the disc and the digital.
And I think there will be now because of the Series S.
The only way that I think that my statement is not true for the digital PS4 to be $350 or $400 is if you can only get the digital version directly from Sony.
And I don't think they have the supply chain to do that because they've never been a distributor like that.
I agree. But my problem is that if you're already talking, so I'm guessing that you're probably thinking $400 for the digital?
Yeah. So what I'm thinking is, no matter what, I think they were probably looking at like $500 to $550 for the PS5 with the disc drive. They now are going to be forced to match at $500 because they already did the more expensive thing. They're not dumb. They're not going to do that again. Mm-hmm. So they're locked in. No matter if they beforehand were going to, you know, be more expensive before, they now are locked in. And I originally thought the discless one, the digital edition, would have been $50 less. I thought we were looking at $500 and $450. But with the introduction of the S and how aggressively priced that is, I think they are going to be forced to take a bigger loss on that one. And I think there's going to be a $100 difference. So I'm looking at $400 for the digital, $500 for the disc drive, only because of how aggressive the Series S is and because they'll make the money back by cutting out the retailers for digital game sales. So I think they're going to be willing
agree,
to take that.
I agree, but I just think that then I think the digital version is going to be a pain in the ass to find.
It probably will, but I also...
Because
well, it won't be a pain in the ass
at
first.
Feel like,
I don't think it'll
like
be a pain in the first.
A $50 quote-unquote loss on production right away is acceptable.
I think that's normal.
You can take that. But then you start distributing into shipping costs and retailers cut and the markups on it, and they're going to have a harder time, I think, getting the retailers to buy into the digital one over the physical one because of markups and margin. So my thought process was, and yeah, I understand how this all works, and I'm thinking exclusively PS5 money, okay? Mm-hmm. So yes, I understand that from a digital storefront that you're going to get, you get somebody to buy a digital PS5. They are 100% invested into the PSN ecosystem because they don't have a choice. I agree with that. But they're, you know, in terms of making their money back from PS Plus, they already have you on PS Plus because you already have a PS4.
Yeah.
Any of these games, as of right now, like, we don't know a significant launch lineup of what you're going to be buying on November 10th or November 17th or whenever this console comes out, November 14th. Which is just the date that I think it's going to be, is that Friday, the November 14th. Because I feel like, and again, I'm talking about money that they can only get from PS5 ecosystem. So, yes, you buy the digital PS5, you get Ratchet and Clank if it comes out. You get Spider-Man Miles Morales if it comes out. But you already have PS Plus. You already had PS Now. Like, you're not getting a PS5 to get PS Now. You're not getting a PS5 to play Call of Duty. Because if you'd really, you could just play Call of Duty on your PS4 or on your other Xbox. So the amount of money, quote unquote, that they would make back from selling the console at a loss is, I think right now, is significantly less with what I consider to be a very lackluster PS5 exclusive launch library. Mm-hmm. Now, unless in 2 days they all of a sudden announce four or five more games at this PS4,
which I'm
PS5
hoping because
showcase, that might change my opinion.
Yeah.
But I don't think that – I think a $50 loss on the digital version is possible, but I don't think that they are willing to take that much of a loss on the disc-based version that they are going to – but they've doubled down on experiences only available on PS5.
Okay. So just to put in perspective, though, for the PS3, I looked it up real quick. They lost per console when that launched $240 to $300 per console. Like, they have been willing in the past to take several hundred dollars loss per console. So I
But they also took a significant hit during that time frame, and it's considered to be their number one mistake of all time.
Because they priced it too high, because they tried to do weird tech stuff. They're not doing weird tech stuff this time. They're playing it safe. I don't say they're going to take a $300 loss here, but I think a $100 loss will probably be acceptable for them to compete with Xbox, because they don't want to lose positioning. And PlayStation is the most important brand to Sony right now.
I agree, but I also still think that they are going to... Because right now, the price difference between a digital Xbox Series is $200.
Yeah, and I don't think they can catch that, so they got to do whatever
they
can.
But I think the PS5 physical is going to cost $550, and the digital is going to cost $400. Because there needs to be enough of a difference in front of the consumer when they're looking at the two boxes to say... Wow, that's a lot of money. I want the discless version. Like, it has to be. It and can't be $50. It can't be $75.
I think it's. That's why I think it's going to be 100. It's going to be 100 because
I think it needs to be more than 100 when your competitor's difference is 200.
But the only difference is the competitors are like, hey, here's a completely lower end machine that isn't fully capable as this other machine, and Sony's just like, it just doesn't have a disc drive.
Grandma ain't gonna know that.
Yeah, but the people that are gonna buy it at launch are the ones that are the ones. Like, the hardcore, the ones that always buy it at launch, they're the ones that are going to be looking at that and decide, like, well, I'm just going to get the PlayStation. So, I think you're underestimating how much they're willing to lose on these and how they have to compete with Microsoft. Microsoft is probably taking
but
a
I think
huge
that they want
loss
you to,
on this.
I think they want you just to buy the digital one, though, and I think that's why they're going to produce the digital one at such a quote-unquote value that the discs, like, they're gonna almost gonna force, you know, again, from a retail standpoint of saying, hey, like, here is a $150 price difference to, you know, because again, this is getting the retailers to put this digital version in their stores is essentially making you a one and done shopper. If this is gonna be in the GameStops, the Targets, the Best Buys, the Walmarts of the world, like, you're not going back there to get games anymore. Like,
you're going
in
back
there
to get controllers and shit, like.
I don't think that the because okay, and then we, you know, we talk about attach rate. Okay, so let's say, what's a good 30-day mark for PlayStation 5 consoles to sell? Like, what's a good number to hear after the first 30 days of launch?
Probably how fast they hit a million. So they hit a million, I think, in 10 days. So I'm assuming it's going to be like 1 to 1.5 million in the first 30 days.
Okay, so let's say 1.5. Okay. And then, so now we start talking about attach rates. And I'm talking about, again, like I was saying earlier, PS5 exclusive games, okay? So let's just say that Ratchet & Clank and Miles Morales are coming out on launch, okay? Mm-hmm. So those are the two PS5 exclusive games. What's considered to be a good attach rate for those games for a launch console?
What do you mean? Like how...
Attach rate, like how many, you know...
Games sold per console?
Yeah.
Probably... So,
30%?
Yeah, it's probably like 30 to 50%.
So that means if it's 1.5, that means that Ratchet & Clank in the first 30 days from launch sells 500,000 copies. That's it for a PS5 exclusive.
Yeah.
And your console is taking a loss.
But if the digital one's going on, they have a better profit margin because people can only buy it from their store. And that's where they're going to hopefully make the money, which is why I think... At launch, we're going to see a disproportional. It's not going to be 50-50 in terms of what's available. And I don't think retailers are going to have much of a say in this because retailers are struggling right now and they just need people in their store.
No, I mean, I get all that, but I'm just looking at it from this standpoint of, like, even... I was trying to pull it up on my phone really quick and I keep forgetting. Or like, even, like, they've started to change some of the artwork on their Facebook pages and everything. Like, I think that... I just feel like they're going to go... this more premium box route, kind of like Apple has done with their phones, and say, you know,
yeah,
play, like, so their images is play has no limits, you know, experience, like Jim Ryan's interview, experience is only on PS5. Like, yes, I understand that there's exclusives and there's going to be things that are only on PS5, but I also feel like in order for you to offset some of the development costs for that, like, your console is going to cost a little bit more. And I'm not going to say it, I'm not saying it's going to be significantly more, but it's going to be more than the Series X. That's what I feel.
Yeah, and I just don't see... I feel like at $500, like, Sony has to be aggressive. They see Microsoft being aggressive. What you think it should be versus what they're going to have to do, I feel like are completely different. I feel like they're going to have to
play this
aggressive. But
it's right in the middle. Like, it'll be right in the middle. Like, I also, like, from the standpoint of selling the digital version at $400, like, you're selling an on-par system, because Microsoft doesn't have a Series X digital version, so we don't even know what they would be doing. This the rumored V version is fake as hell. I don't care what anybody says.
That's super fake.
So for you to sell essentially the same powerful console as a Series X for $100 less, is an interesting tactic to me, because the $200 less console is significantly less powerful, and we know it's significantly less powerful.
And so I think that's for you the to only fall in the middle, they can play.
Yeah, and again, my prediction is based only on the disced version of the PS5 will cost more than the Series X. Yeah. Now they might do something stupid and just say $525, which would look terrible as a sticker.
No, I think they're bought into it has to end in $99 or $49.
Yeah, so I mean, we'll find out on Wednesday. I mean, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Like, I have no problem admitting that I'm wrong, but this is just kind of my thought process from the Jim Ryan interviews of the past. This, you know, like, there was obviously something that happened about a year ago, significant shakeups in Sony. Maybe the pricing model was around surrounded by this, how they're distributing content. There's a lot of things going on, and there was a power struggle at Sony. And I guess, like, we may or may not find out who's going to win this, who wins this power struggle. And if I just think that they are going to, they feel like that they have enough weight behind them from PS4 success that I think that they can, you know, charge a little bit more to be the Apple of gaming. And we've seen what that's turned into Apple lately. And, you know, but they've got the studios, they've got the games, and they just bought Insomniac and stuff. So, I mean, like, I think that they're going to try to play the premium card a little bit more.
And I think they made the mistake by trying to have the more expensive console during the PS3 generation, and that didn't work for them. And then they saw Xbox try to have the most expensive console this generation, and it didn't work for Xbox. So I feel like if they...
But I think that they're with the digital version, they're going to be right in the middle. And then with the physical version, they're going to be a little higher. That's just where I am.
Yeah. And I just feel like they have to match and then be super aggressive on that digital one and hope that's enough.
The only caveat that I'll have to this pricing thing, and again, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I don't care. It's fun to talk like this, like, instead of just like towing the line and saying, oh, $4.49, like, you know, like, you know, I'm not going to play price.
That's why I'm thinking
$1.50. You know, like,
that's why I'm thinking like the aggressive thing, the most aggressive thing they could do is like $100 difference, and that's it.
The
and
only
that,
thing
they
that
don't
could change
do
that
it.
Is if they drop some really big bombshells on Wednesday for like two or three games. Like, if all, like, you know, it's not going to happen. But if all of a sudden we see another like Uncharted prequel, like, that we didn't know about, that somebody's working on, or some bombshell comes out of left field, like Sony Bend is working on some brand new IP, or they're bringing some series back, or something comes completely out of left field, like, that we didn't have any idea, like, all of a sudden, like, we got a brand new Sly Cooper or something. That's, you know, this
Final Fantasy 16 apparently is rumored to be,
and
that could
if
be
that's
big.
Exclusive if that's exclusive only
time exclusive
and then,
is the rumor right yeah. now.
And if it's going to run at 120 frames and it's going to support keyboard and mouse, like, you could get, you know, like, a significant PC family to switch over. But I'm talking about, like, a marquee title. Like, all of a sudden, if
Final
GTA
Fantasy 16. I think Final Fantasy 16, and you're thinking of the MMO, this is talking about proper Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
I think if that turns out to be the case, that could be big. What I think is going to happen is we're just going to get the launch lineup, and it's going to be like, oh, Demon's Souls is actually a launch title, and then maybe one or two other games that we saw at that event. They'll probably
have a new IP or some, you know, like, they have,
yeah,
there'll
be
something.
That there'll be that teaser, there'll be that one teaser of another game, but it won't be there at launch. I think what we'll see is probably confirm Miles Morales is release date as a launch game, throw Demon's Souls as a launch game, date Gran Turismo, you date Ratchet and Clank, and then you probably say Bugsnax is going to be the first PlayStation Plus game, and you just hit them with that stuff, and it's just going to be confirming everything we've seen before and just throw some dates on it. Maybe one surprise, but I don't know what surprise you would put.
Right.
Because everyone's kind of working on a game.
I mean, there's supposed to be some rumored, like, major marquee title, and if it is Final Fantasy, then, like, but there's, like, I've seen rumblings on Twitter for the last month that there's some studio, there's some title that Sony secured and paid, like, a ton of money for that, that we haven't,
I can also,
you know,
see, you know, The Last of Us multiplayer just being finally, like, confirmed and shown, and that could be something to get people excited of, just like, hey, Last of Us Part 2 is coming to PlayStation 5 in December. Oh shit, look, here's multiplayer. And then,
yeah, and then, I mean, enough. They could, a couple saving graces for them could be as well too, of saying, you know, just automatically, like, Last of Us and Ghost of Tsushima are going to just work on PS5. Like, you know, if you own it,
they're
digitally, it's
enhanced.
Just gonna work, yeah. And it's gonna be enhanced for PS5 for free with their smart delivery or whatever they want to call it. You know, system in line to get some people to buy that game even now. Start playing now, and then you can just, you know, just move your progression over. you know, because like the other companies, like even back to the Ubisoft Forward really quick, like Rainbow Six, you know, said free upgrade 120 frames. Okay, we'll see.
Yeah.
You know, but I just think that a lot of this better on PlayStation is, you know, like they're going to have a little bit of that, more of that, you have to pay for the better thing. Yeah. And I don't think it's right. And again, as I wrote in the Facebook group and I wrote in Twitter, like, I hope I'm wrong, but what if I'm not?
Yeah. So. But we will be recording a special episode for the PlayStation announcement. That'll probably drop the same day as this episode. So check your feed.
Which means you might have listened to that one before you listened to this one, and I sound like a complete idiot.
Yeah, yeah. That is
which
very
I'm
possible.
Totally fine with. I have no problem with that.
You're used to it.
Oh, yeah. My wife tells me I'm an idiot every day. Customers tell me I'm an idiot every day.
All the time.
All right. You want to review your game real quick?
Yeah. So,
okay.
I'm going to review Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 plus 2 Remake. I think that's what it's called. This is going to be a quick review because they did the job. They did it right. It's damn good. From the start, this game, with its intro video to the first time you drop in Warehouse, it hooks into your nostalgia feelings, and it just kind of never lets go. These games were like wonderfully recreated, and the most important thing is they feel right. The actual gameplay, which is the most important part, feels like it should. It feels like you're playing the old games, just with better visuals, better frame rate, so technically a better overall game. As someone who has played Tony Hawk 2 recently, a couple months ago, this feels exactly like that. It just looks better, it runs better, and it's fantastic. Activision has been doing such a good job at remaking these games, and this is just continuing that new tradition of them, of taking their old franchises and making them fully remastered and work on new hardware. And I was so happy that they announced a Tony Hawk 1, because I've been wanting more Tony Hawk games for a long time. And I was a little worried because we saw their terrible HD remake of these very same games on the PS3. And then we saw the sad continuation of this franchise with Tony Hawk Pro Skater 5. But those games never were able to get the feel down. And this one absolutely is able to pull it off. Like, you quickly, if you played any of those games, can get into the swing of things and pull off the same tricks you were doing back then. It's muscle memory for me, so being able to just do the exact same lines I was able to do like 10, 20 years ago is just a great feeling. And the fact that, you know, they didn't change the levels, structure, or anything like that. All the tricks or all the goals are in the same spots. They just look slightly different. Though, caveat, sometimes the goals kind of blend too much into it, like the skate letters and the secret tapes. They kind of blend too much into the environment for my liking. But because I've played those games so much, I know where they are already, so it's not that big a deal. But from afar, like, view, you sometimes can struggle to see some of them. But the whole package is just so well done. So they broke the games down into a skate tour, and it just has the game separated 1, 2, and then they just have a free skate mode with full online leaderboards where you can do quick sessions, you can do a single session, and they have like high score leaderboards on them. And it's a really great way to like return to the levels and try and get like the best score possible, which I thought it was good at Tony Hawk. Holy shit, the scores within the first couple days.
Yeah, but aren't some people glitching the stuff too, though?
No, I guess there's just people that can just... You know how you in Tony Hawk, you can do a trick and you can go into overtime as long as you keep the combo going. Mm-hmm. Every time I do that, I get bored after a minute or two and just end my combo. These fucking people are keeping their combo going for at least a half hour, like it seems. And their scores are just ridiculous.
They're just rubber banding the stick and the L and R buttons.
Something. They must have something going where they can do that. But everything from the music being most of the original songs, the only songs they weren't able to get were songs where like the bands don't exist anymore or the record label doesn't exist anymore. So they got all the music they could legally obtain, And then they've added new songs to go along with the new skaters, which there's been some criticism of some of the newer songs they put in it because it doesn't really fit the ska punk soundtrack that was in the original games. But if you're going to include new skaters in the game, you need to put music that those new skaters would probably listen to. So I'm more accepting of the newer music than some of the people in a community are. But the look of it, the visuals are top notch. The soundtrack is there. The skate design, the skateboarders designs are accurate, though they kept them old. They made them old character designs, so it's kind of sad seeing like 50-year-old skateboards just like bail and hurt themselves. But they've added little details, like the characters actually make sounds and react to when you're skating, you know, like grunts when they fall, or they'll like celebrate when you pull off a big trick, which is a little tiny thing that just adds to the game, so it's not a complete silent experience other than you hearing a board and the music. The only problem I have with how they did the skate tours, so in the previous games, every time you pick a skater, you could go through the game and do all the goals, and those goals that you accomplished are tied specifically to that skater, so when you switch to another skater, the game basically resets, and you can then do those goals again with a different skater. This game, there's only one skate tour, so once you beat the game, or both games, once with that skater and accomplish all the goals, and you switch to another skateboarder, they don't reset those goals. So it's a little annoying. At first, I thought they destroyed the replayability by making that change, because I immediately, after I finished the game with Bucky Lassick, was like, well, now I want to play one of the new skateboarders, and then I saw all the goals were finished and got kind of bummed out. They went in a different direction and basically added individual challenges for each skater. So the replayability is in that aspect of the game, in terms of each skater has their own thing of, like, get the 6 score, do these specific move sets with that skater, and there's a ton of challenges, and all the challenges unlock money and cosmetic items, and there's a ton of cosmetic items for you to customize your skater with, like shirts, pants, skateboards, the wheels, the trucks. You can go all out in terms of like all the unlockable customization options for like your skater and your board, which I think it has a rotating store because some stuff seems to like come in and out of the rotation. As far as I can tell, there's no microtransactions in it at all. You have to do all the challenges to unlock it, and that's why there's hundreds and hundreds of challenges in this game. So there's plenty of replayability if you want to unlock every skateboard, because you need to earn all the money, and there's a ton of skaters in this game that all have challenges. So the replayability is there. I still wish it had the original like skate tour option, but I'm fine with that, as long as they hopefully patch that in the future. But I'm okay doing all the challenges for the individual skaters, because some of the challenges are really difficult, and the skill level for some of the legendary challenges that you definitely have to like, or you have to like learn a skill to do some of the goals, or have to be really good at the game. So overall, like, they nailed that mode. They added the create a park stuff from 3. They added multiplayer modes as well. That stuff is pretty bare bones, but I feel like that's on par with the previous games, how they had create a park and how they had multiplayer. So I'm not going to hold anything too against the game for kind of continuing that tradition of having like a subpar create a park and a subpar multiplayer, because that's just how it's always been with the games. At the end of the day, like, I only have minor nitpicks with this game, and I have to really stretch to find things that I dislike about this game. So as far as I'm concerned, this is damn near perfect. Like, it does exactly what I want it to do. It feels like a Tony Hawk game, and it looks like a Tony Hawk game, but it just runs better than any previous Tony Hawk game. So for that, I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 5. I really hope they fix the skate tour stuff, if they can change some of the visual stuff to make it a little bit more accessible for people, or like find a way to like improve some of the visuals for like the individual goals, that would be great. And if they can beef up the create a park stuff, that would have been nice. But for what is there now, it's a 4.5.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, I really haven't heard anybody like talking negatively about the game at all. So
and they did a fantastic job. Now Activision has the problem of do you continue this and do 3 and 4? Do you try and do a Tony Hawk Pro Skater 6? Like, they need to figure out what they want to do. And also, they're going to run out of games to remaster at a certain point.
Yeah.
Yeah, so highly recommend it. I'm super, super excited that they actually were able to get it, like, done
properly.
I have
a feeling, too, this is going to be one of those games, too. Like, not that it's a bad thing, but, like, this is going to be a pretty good price for the holiday.
Oh, yeah, it's already $40 now, so...
Yeah,
like,
so this is definitely going to be a $24, $30 thing, like, on, you know, like, holidays, you know, it'd be a great, great Christmas gift for anybody that, you know, has a console, hasn't played games a little while, or has a nostalgia feel for playing classic games. Like, this, it's solid, so...
Yeah, and can I say, like, I don't really buy collector's editions. We got a review copy for this game, but I still bought a collector's edition. And the collector's edition is fantastic. Like, it's a reprint of a board that hasn't been printed in a while, and every board is unique. Like, the top wood on the board has a different finish for everybody. I didn't know that until I opened it, and I saw, like, people opening their boards and realized that they're all different. So, if you can find a collector's edition, pick one up. Like, the board's beautiful, and the fact that they're all unique is, like, really cool. I found out that, like, the top of the board are all different colors. Like, mine's green. Sarah's brother got purple. And I saw pink boards, yellow boards. And I'm just like, shit, cool. Am I going to go on eBay and start trying to collect the different boards? Because I thought that was, like, really cool.
All right. We'll do, a little bit of a quicker version of what we're playing and watching. I have a couple of different things, but nothing super extensive. So I finally got my Xbox HDMI port repaired, which is not a huge deal. Like, Owen broke it, but it was probably already loose already. You know,
probably.
I still got a pretty good deal on the system itself anyway. So, but I was finally able to get it, like, hooked up. I still want to mess with it a little bit and see if I can run, like, my Roku and stuff through it. Like, 'cause I think you can, like, there's a bunch of HDMI ports on it.
Yeah, there's an HDMI.
Yeah, so I kind of want to mess with that a little bit just to see, like, how that functionality works. But, I mean, obviously I was using it, you know, it's primarily as a Game Pass machine for me right now. So I got on with Johnny. Johnny's a boy, and I played the original Halo. And we probably played about halfway through the campaign. And... it's old.
Yeah, yeah.
I wasn't not having fun with it, but just some of I know that they established themselves as, like, this is made by Bungie, who I truly enjoy their you know, Destiny, obviously. And I think I can go in and change some of the buttons, but just the default setup, like how you reload and how you melee, just feels different than it does from a game in 2020, obviously. And I'm still having a hard time. Like, I consistently found myself trying to aim down sights, which you can't do. So I kept throwing grenades. And then the game also has friendly fire.
Okay. Yeah.
So that was and friendly grenades. So, like, there was a couple problems with that, but I mean, I had a good time with it. I can definitely see I don't see a great story yet, but I don't think that the real story for Halo comes until later on in the series. This is kind of was just more establishing the footprint of the franchise of a shooter. It still feels pretty good. It's kind of cool. You can I don't even know what the button's called, but like an options button on the Xbox controller, you can actually go back to the original graphics and the upgraded graphics on the Master Chief Collection, where they did a lot more stuff with, like, lighting and textures. And even, like, I found myself just kind of being okay with the older version sometimes, just playing it.
It actually still holds up pretty well visually, you know?
The additional textures, like, it sounds bad to say this, but I feel like they just did it because they could. It almost looks like they were trying too hard. Like, oh, let's just draw a bunch of designs on the wall because we can, and make the, like, let's put some little, like, you know, like, fluorescent lights on the left side there because we can. And I'm like,
yeah.
So, you know, Johnny did a lot of the driving for me, and I was shooting things through the, from the Gatling gun on the, and that stuff. I didn't, like, dislike it, but, you know, it was like, all right, like, I kind of want to go through them because I want to be kind of a little bit invested. This is a marquee, you know, Xbox franchise, and I do want to, you know, check it out and see what it's all about, and I want to kind of get the whole gist of it. I find it awesome that you can play co-op through the whole thing. Like,
yeah, that's always been like a Halo thing. That like,
yeah, two player co-op in this one, and then I think he said it goes up to 3 and 4 player co-op in some of the other ones. So it's definitely like we were having a good time. I feel like the party chat in Xbox isn't nearly as good as it is on PlayStation.
That has been it's been a problem they've had with party chat on that. It's been a constant like influx.
But I also found out that Xbox can run Discord.
Yes,
so I'm gonna look into that. And to see how that works. And I did just get, I picked up an Xbox headset, so I'll be talking about that soon. So, just the, you know, some of the stuff, the way it works, I'm having a little bit of a hard time with the interface. But it's not because the interface is bad. It's just because I don't know it.
Yeah. It's completely different than what you're used to. So it's
And Game Pass is front and center on the UI as well. Like, which is fine. Cause I love that. I can just kind of go through and like, oh yeah, I can download that. I can download that. I can download that. And then today, I started playing, Super Lucky Tale.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't really even know what to kind of call that. It feels like I'm playing as Tails from Sonic and Sonic's franchise. Like, he looks kind of just like him. Mm-hmm. But then it's like Mario, sort of. Like, you're collecting a bunch of coins. There's some hidden things. There's some objectives. And there's some, you know, like, it's a like a 3D platformer that has some puzzle mechanics to it. It's fun because, like, the graphics are fascinating. Like, Owen's at home. He was home today with me doing his virtual kindergarten. And, you know, he got time to break. And, like, while he was watching, like, he had, like, a 15 or 20-minute video he had to watch. And then I was playing the game. And he came in the living room. He's like, what's that? You know, like, in terms of, like, the graphics, he's like, what game is that? And then all of a sudden, next thing I know, I'm playing the game with him, which entails him taking over the controls until he gets somewhere that he can't go any farther, and then I can help him, and then he takes them back. So, but it's definitely, it's fun, like, just to figure it out. Like, it's got some wonkiness with the camera, but the mechanics and the jumping mechanics, like, I'm having a really good time with it. Like, it's fun. I haven't got a chance to go back into the Avengers at all yet, and, my Switch is out for repair. And then I can also... the USB port on the Switch broke.
How the fuck did that break?
O-W-E-N.
Oh, my God.
So,
just get him a Tiger electronic toy now. Like, that's all he can handle.
It's partially our fault. Like, we didn't set as much rules for things. And, you know, like... Just the main problem that I think with the Switch is that when you want to charge it, is that you have to plug it into the bottom. And a 5-year-old, like, rested on their stomach when they're playing. So he's constantly like pushing that USB port in there.
It when it's charging. I just dock it and then walk away,
which is going to be the new standard for Owen. Yeah. But we were running into a little bit of problem, and partially like the controller that I use, that Hori controller, isn't individually battery powered, so that takes away some of the battery power from the Switch as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not getting as much stuff there, but it sounds like right now, like, Nintendo's, because it's going right to Nintendo, that they're taking care of it for a pretty good price, and they're going to fix whatever else is wrong with it. So I was okay with it. And again, I bought the Switch third party, so I always run that risk. I know that those risks are entailed. I might have been a little bit more agitated if I bought this thing like brand new and this happened, but at the same time, like, there's, you know, Nintendo has a unique USB-C port from what I was reading a little bit too, and some of the other USB-C charging things can kind of mess with it a little bit. So maybe going forward, it's only going to get charged in the dock. But it is what it is. So I'll have it back, and it'll be fine. So it's, you know, 90% my fault, 10% the 5-year-old's fault. But that's what comes with the territory of exposing him to gaming. So I'm sure I broke some stuff when I was his age too. So.
Never broke a thing as a child.
Watching quickly, I finished Cobra Kai season 2. Kind of looking forward to seeing season 3. It made me, gave me the desire to, later on today, I watched the first Karate Kid just to have it on. So that was kind of interesting just to watch that. It kind of instilled that. And they did a really good job with Cobra Kai in terms of getting the actors and, you know, to play in there and the ties to it. So if you haven't seen that yet, it's trending on Netflix. It's like in one of their top 5 things. If you're a Karate Kid fan, like, you can watch it. And if you're, you can get your wife or your significant other or your, you know, your kids to maybe watch it with you, because it actually has like the drama of a sitcom in it with romances and feuds and trying to figure out who's good and who's bad. So there's some pretty good storylines to it. And Obviously, it ends with a cliffhanger, so making people looking forward to season 3, which they've already confirmed. So it's on Netflix, so it's definitely a highly recommended. Even if you're not a Karate Kid fan, like, you won't feel lost. It's a good story overall. So, but that's it for playing and watching. I watched the Lions blow a fourth quarter lead like they always do.
To like a really shitty quarterback too, which is sad.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah. It's just like the first three quarters, I was like, oh, Trubisky's going to not have his job next week. And then at the end of the game, it's like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
And two brand new Lions, one free agent got lionized by deciding that he wanted to bump an official like a dumbass. And then their rookie running back had the game-winning touchdown in his hands, and he's just like, oh, wait, I play for the Lions. I have to drop this.
Yeah, sounds about right. For me, the only other game I played outside of Tony Hawk was a game I was hoping to review this week, but just a bunch of personal things kind of got me away from playing games last week. But that is Paradise Killer. So this is a murder mystery open-world game. It's got a super bizarre premise, but it's got that type of art style that I like, which is weird. So the main character is called Lady Love Dies. She is an exiled human, and she's been called into paradise because the people in charge of the Paradise Island, and when I mean paradise, I mean we're talking about like gods, basically. They were murdered, and she's one of the best detectives who happens to be in exile. She gets brought down to try and solve the murders and figure out, you know, who did it, and then prosecute them. So this is open world, and it's one of those open world games that you can find clues basically in any order. So it's completely up to you of like how you want to tackle this investigation. So it could be a little confusing in the beginning. I feel like me and Sarah are just a little bit confused right now, just because I think in like the sequence of evidence, like if there was 5 pieces of evidence, we found evidence number 4. So we're trying to like figure out like what we found and what it means, and then trying to put the puzzle pieces together. The game,
but since it's open world, you're not finding the evidence in the order that they want you to find it in, so you're having a hard time piecing it together. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yes, basically. You know, to where it's okay. Just like, okay, where do they want me to go to find this in like the proper order? Or is it possible for me to solve it with just like this one piece of the puzzle? Mm-hmm. That's the thing we're trying to like figure out. The game has this beautiful style. It almost looks like, it's basically the 90s version of the internet, in terms of like that, like Saved by the Bell color scheme sort of thing, you know, like those bright pinks, those bright blues, like they borderline 80s neon, but like the 90s version of that, if that makes any sense. And your main investigation tool is like a laptop, that has like that 90s internet style, like those loud pages with like those pinks, those blues. The music has a vaporwave sound, if you've ever watched like Dead Mall's series, basically like that type of elevator mall music, but like cool. Like Dave's probably like has no idea what I'm talking about when I say vaporwave. So this game like oozes style. It's absolutely bizarre.
This is a flaw of you being able to see my face.
Yeah. Because I can see you just being like, what? It's the dialogue is like off the wall. The main character is called Lady Love Dies. It sounds like something Kojima would think of when he's trying to name a character.
Which just means it's a Michael game.
Yes, it's basically a Michael game, and it's a detective mystery game. So just trying to solve the murder. I'm hoping to get more time and beat it.
Don't get too aggressive into the murder mystery thing, because you're going to get Angela's attention, and then she's going to make me play it.
I don't think either one of you guys would like this, or you guys would have to tell Owen, please go to bed. Because there is an option to turn mature content off, and there's some weird characters in this game. So it's very bizarre. I highly recommend looking at a trailer for this game just to get an idea of the art style.
Don't buy it because Michael's saying that he's enjoying it. Watch the trailer and then decide if you think that he would enjoy it based on what Michael said.
I'm just saying, like, I have a very particular like taste in like visual styles that I know Dave and Angela would not like with some of this stuff.
This is why that this works between the two of us, though, because we have we're a large enough age gap, but then also like even just the household dynamics are different as well, which gives us great conversations for stuff.
This like, is sexy.
No 5-year-old can play this, yeah. You know.
This is sexy perverted Ace Attorney. Like, that's what this is. So, like, that is how I would describe this game. So if that sounds interesting to you with vaporwave music, this is for you. Dave doesn't know what the hell I'm talking about, so I know this isn't for Dave.
Somebody clip that, please.
Yeah. So I'm enjoying the hell out of this game. I'm just hoping to get more time so I can give it a full review and get more character names, because I love the character names. And there's a skeleton guy he's just a red skeleton with like cool pants and glasses. It's like, what the fuck?
Fantastic. I love the fact that there is a genre of games that exist like that for anybody, and particularly like this is like 100% your thing. And we've even seen that at trade shows or at events that we go to where we walk by something and you're like, hey Dave, you're probably gonna like that, or that's a Michael thing. And you know, like I love that exists, and we both know that, you know, like when certain things come across the board, we're like, all right, like this is for Dave or this is for Michael. So,
basically, yeah, we know, especially like when review stuff comes around. There's only certain, we only have a prime where like we both want to play a game and we only have like one copy of it when it's like big AAA stuff, but anything under big AAA stuff, me and Dave have completely different tastes.
Yeah, yeah.
For what we
and I think that, you know, creatively enough that you've figured out a way to minimize that problem for us being a duo on at least on PS4. So
yeah, for sure. But that's
right.
That's kind of it.
Or?
I'm started Avatar with Sarah just because I just kind
of wait. Okay, so my son and both of my sons watch these religiously. So which one are we talking about? The Nickelodeon
cartoon.
Avatar?
Yeah, okay. The Nickelodeon Avatar, which I never watched just because it was just kind of not. I think it was out when I was like a teenager, so I wasn't really watching Nickelodeon too much. I'm impressed with like how good the storytelling is for like a Nickelodeon show.
The bits and pieces that I watched of it years ago were really good, and like I'm not kidding, like this is like Owen has to watch like an episode of this before he goes to bed with his brother.
Yeah, no, it's really good and it holds up, you know, like even like as an adult watching this, because like the action's good, the writing's good, it's got fantastic storytelling with like a full arc per season, you know, like which kid shows tend to stay away from, like having like a continuous story to follow, because you know, Nickelodeon will air stuff like out of order just to fill time. So I'm really impressed with how it is. It's definitely one of those things where Sarah recommended we watch a couple episodes, and I think she's almost close to regretting it, because every time I get home from work I'm like, Avatar. Like I want to watch Avatar.
There's a lot, right?
I think there's like 5 seasons, and then there's a spinoff show, Legend of Korra.
Right. Yep.
But it's definitely one of those things where Sarah's like, all right, let's go to bed. And I'm just like, 3
more
episodes.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, yeah, because that's the same thing that happened with my wife and I with Cobra Kai, is that it was like end of, like, we were on episode like 9 or 10 on a Friday night, and I had to close on a Saturday. And I'm like, they're only 30 minutes. Like,
are 22 minutes.
Yeah, it's 3 more episodes. We'll be done before 1 a.m. And she's like, Are you serious? And I'm like, yes, we're gonna finish this.
Like, yeah, I'm more like, she's like, I'm gonna go to bed. I'm like, it's 10:23. Who goes to bed at 10:23? You have to go to bed at 10 or 11. Like,
or when my younger co-host orders me to go to bed on Twitter.
Yes, yeah. So when it's 1 a.m. and you're just like, the PlayStation 5 will be this much. And then the other thing, I started watching Kim's Convenience, which is actually really fun. Like, it's one of those shows that's always kind of been on my list. It's about a Korean family that owns a convenience store, and actually stars the guy who's gonna be in a new Marvel movie. I forget the name of the Marvel movie because I'm tired, but it's really fun, funny show. So it's just another thing I've been doing, a thing because of like work, basically that my work has basically packed my 40-hour schedule into 4 days. So like during those 4 days I am like dead tired, I just want to watch like Avatar or Kim's Convenience. I don't want to watch anything that's going to make me think which is why, like, during my off days, I need to really work on Paradise Killer, because, like, after work, I do not have the brain for, which is why
I think Michael's starting to understand. He always understood, but I think he's starting to feel and understand a little bit of, like, in July when he was furloughed and I'd come home from work and he's like, hey, I want to do this today. And I'm like, I don't want to do anything. Yeah. I think oh, come on, it won't take that long. And I'm like, dude.
Like, I have no problem, like, recording things, but when it terms, like trying to solve a murder mystery, like, nope.
And that's why I've started watching some of that, just like, you know, like we went away from it, but that's like where Big Bang Theory came from and Bless This Mess came from, and just these random shows that I can just throw on and just sit on the couch and just not think about the rest of the day.
Well, basically what it was is I used to just watch The Office over and over again for that specific purpose, and I finally was like, let's just watch different shows, like, let me just watch something that isn't The Office. But that's it for me for playing and watching. So next week, hopefully I'll have a review for Paradise Killer.
Awesome. All right, we got one question sent to us this week from Darren Curtis. Again, you can send us questions using hashtag AskDigitalDays. Gus, we did see your question. I just know you posted it in the Discord later, so I'm sure that we'll get to it in the show next week. And it might also be irrelevant by the time that the Sony event happens. So, but I'm sure we'll talk about it even during the Sony event. So, but Darren Curtis on Facebook wrote, due to Sony and sending out email reservations, I've found myself buying more PS games digitally so that I can bribe them into sending me the email. Has anyone else started doing this? Sounds silly, but it might work.
I thought about it, but then I was like, fuck them. Like, cause I hate the pre-order process that they've now made.
I am a little worried that, you know, that these first round of pre-orders may possibly be direct from Sony based on that email that they sent out like a month ago or a couple weeks ago. I don't think that this will be the only way to pre-order, but I think maybe the first 3 or 4 days, it might be like they might try really hard to get you to go to their site and get the people that they want it now and they want it right now. And
I think this is mostly because we've seen resellers devastate the console market this year because of COVID. I think this is the only way they can like fix this, because retailers don't give a fuck about resellers for the most part, especially now.
Right.
Because before, like when I worked at Target, we hated resellers because the whole point was customers come in, we need to have the product. So when someone is like, right, I want to buy 10 of this console, be like, no, we'll sell you one because 9 more people can come in and buy more things. Because of COVID, I don't think the retailers care if someone wants to buy 10 consoles because they just want to move stuff because they can't really have people in anymore.
But I also think that the vendor, or Sony in this case, or Microsoft in this case, will put limitations on it, which they have done at other
retailers.
And this
is a way to control it, though.
Right. But I think they would do it even at a Target or a Walmart or a Best Buy
as well. But they can only police that so much, you know, in terms of like the consoles getting rid of.
Yeah, it's interesting. The biggest thing that I have a problem with it, I would assume, if it's direct from Sony, is that you would have to like pay up front, you know, which is also a thing that's nice with Amazon or nice with GameStop's, you know, or I don't know of Target's pre-order system or Best Buy's pre-order system. But I still don't think you have to pay for it until you get it.
Yeah. I'm more worried about supply distribution.
Yeah. Then, you know, part of Gus's question that he put in the Discord fits into this a little bit of, and I think the direct answer right now is no, and Sony doesn't care. I don't think Sony will have a finance plan either, like that Xbox has.
I don't think so. I don't think Microsoft has had this finance plan for years now, and I think it would be too much to expect Sony to then try and distribute and then also have a financial plan built
and
in.
And it came out again when Xbox was getting their ass kicked. So they were trying to do anything that they could to sell consoles. And then they found out that it actually worked and helped. And it's a significantly good thing if you can't afford to, you know, to drop 500 or to drop 1,000, like you had hinted at before, Gus, like of like, oh, I have to buy the console. I have to buy Plus. I have to buy another controller. I have to buy a game. I have to buy a headset that's compatible. You know, and again, like even some of the other headsets that I'm seeing, the next gen headsets that I'm seeing wirelessly coming out for Microsoft are compatible because they support the Bluetooth functionality that Sony doesn't. So it's, you know, like there's just a lot of check marks on the other side and, you know, on top of, you know, premium console. So
my fear though with Sony, like if they heavily put the distribution on themselves, you know, like they have the most consoles to sell. They've never sold something this big, so I don't know if they have the tools to make sure I get it on launch. Especially, it's going to release like the week of an election or the week after an election, and this election's already in the United States is already going to probably choke the post office even more, because they're going to have more mail-in ballots than ever before. So I'm worried, like, who their partner is going to be, because we've already seen, as someone who's been working retail and deals with FedEx and UPS, they are also struggling right now as people move away from the post office and move to FedEx and UPS. So I'm I have heavy concerns. I trust Amazon more to deliver it the first day, even though I've had a fucking shit ton of problems with Amazon.
But there's also Sony. There's also quote unquote rewards or customer service that Amazon can do to soften the blow if you don't get it on launch. Like not getting your console or not getting your game on launch day sucks, but Amazon can go, hey, we can extend your Prime for you. We can issue you like a, you know, we can issue you like a credit, you know, something that helps that we can like, hey, I got my console late, but I ended up, I was able to buy like two games because Amazon messed up and I was able to take care of something. Sony would just be like, well, you get it when you get it.
Yeah.
You know, like they're not going to be like concerned about the customer service, which, you know, the supply thing, can be a problem, like in terms of distribution as well. Like I'm seeing it at my job now, just getting things in the building is a big enough challenge from the vendors. And then even the stuff that we order, getting it to the customers can be a little bit of a problem as well. And there are a lot of issues going on to where like I would be very nervous if Sony was using FedEx, UPS, or USPS instead of some other third party delivery service. Like, I mean, I can't think of anything right now, but like, you know, Digital Lines, I don't even think that's what they're called, but
DHL,
some other, so like there are some other options that you have there, but that all factors into a little bit of cost too, in terms of how much shipping is going to be and how much it's going to be and guaranteed, you know, release day shipping. Like there's a lot of stuff
that's what I'm worried about
out there that need to be answered. And we are now officially 60 days from Xbox Series launching. and we don't know how to get, you know, we don't even know how Xbox pre-orders or what they're going to look like.
Yeah, but at least Microsoft, their All Access stuff sends you to Best Buy, Amazon, Target. It sends you to those websites to actually get it, and most of those companies are like, release date delivery costs this set amount, or it's free because this console costs more than $35. Will Sony have that in place? Where will shipping be free? Will there be a premium on release date delivery? Are they able to get you there on release date, even if you pay for it? Like, there's a lot of things that are out of their hands and they haven't really experimented with, at least in the United States. I don't know what they have set up in other countries. So,
But ultimately, I think to answer his question, like, I agree with you that strategy might work, but I also think it might be too little too late for you to try to implement that now.
Yeah. Hopefully they look that I have The Last of Us and I have Ghost of Tsushima. And be like, oh, he buys it. I think I have every first party game that Sony's released in the last like 5 years. So hopefully, oh no, I don't have Order 1886. Son of a bitch. I'm not going to get it now.
Nope.
I didn't buy it when it was $5. Shit.
All right. So quickly, Spotlight. For me, the Spotlight would just be my Immortals Phoenix Rising preview. Please check it out on YouTube. Subscribe if you haven't subscribed. Listen to it on the audio feed. Leave us a review. Similar to some of the content I did for Division 2 Warlords of New York a couple months ago, please let me know what you thought about it. We try to make all of those bonus content pieces that we do like very obvious that they're bonus content. I don't know if anybody pays enough attention, but it has different artwork, it has different titles, it's not listed as a numbered episode, so you know, we try to make sure that if you don't have any desire to look at that, you're not getting tricked or duped into looking at something different. So not that we have enough people to trick her to dupe anyways.
And my Spotlight, which we'll get to in a couple minutes, is our Patreon. We're going to put up a new bonus episode this week talking about the worst games you've ever played. So if you're in that tier or interested in hearing us talk in a bonus episode, check out our Patreon, which Dave will tell you about.
Yeah, that'll right probably now. Be a little closer to the end of the week just because of this episode and the bonus episode.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah. But there is a September bonus episode that is coming.
And my wife
this
went
month
back to work.
Yeah. There is a bonus episode coming this month.
Yeah. So, but again, you can follow us on the social medias. The main account for Twitter is at Digital Days Pod. Michael's is at the First MJC. Mine is at Good Dave Hunt, which is also my tag on Xbox. And my tag on PSN is Good Dave Hunting on PSN. So you can join the Facebook group where we had a lot of fun this week. I put up a couple polls and we had some interesting conversations with the Immortals preview going up and the Xbox Series X price talk and my prediction on pricing. So we tend to have some fun in there. It's kind of maybe the first time it got a little animated for versus a couple people, but it was very minor. Like, even some people are like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I'm like, I think everybody's okay. Like, nobody was like blocking or sending anybody any messages, but it's been a fun discussion. And then obviously full disclosure, like, if you guys don't realize this yet, like Michael hinted at earlier in the show, like, we came from a PlayStation background. We know and understand the PlayStation business. We are learning a lot about Xbox and PC's side of things. And so we are paying a little bit more attention to that maybe than we're supposed to, but we also want to make sure that we are painting with a broad brush when we talk to everybody. We would love to have new listeners come in here, and I don't want a new listener to come in here and be like, I don't need to listen to another Sony fanboy. Like, I like Sony. I enjoy Sony. Their first party games are similar to none. They, you know, like, nobody can do what they do, but the stuff that is available to players on PC and on Switch and on Xbox is good, and it's fun, and options and choices are always good. So that's where some of the conversations in the Facebook group come from. Like, I love Last of Us. I love Uncharted, but there's other games in the world. I love Mario. I love Zelda. I'm hoping to love some character or franchise on Xbox.
Banjo so. Or Kazooie.
But yeah, join the Facebook group, join the Discord channel. All those links are in the social feed. Follow us on YouTube. Like I said, we have that URL now, youtube.com/digitaldaysgaming. And as Michael mentioned, patreon.com/digitaldaysgaming. $1 tier is the tip jar. That essentially pays for a month of podcast hosting for us. $3 Discord access. That also coincides with if you're a subscriber on Twitch. And then $5 gets you 24-hour early access to the show. So you get it on Wednesdays at 6 a.m. instead of Thursdays. And $7 is the monthly September bonus episode. You only get it in September. the monthly episode that we will be posting September's as well. We have August, July, June, and May back as well. So if you subscribe to that $7 tier, you get access to everything that I mentioned below as long as and the previous episodes. And you could also just, even if we do post things on Patreon that are available to everybody, in terms of when the episodes post, like my Immortals thing was on there. So if Patreon is an app that you use, I think you can like follow us on Patreon. But we would love if you consider supporting us on Patreon, however you choose. If you don't want to, like, that's okay. You know, if you support us on Twitch, that's fantastic. And again, sharing the show is a huge way to help. And then in the show notes as well, there is a direct PayPal link. If you decide that you would like to directly donate to us at a one-time donation, you can do that through our PayPal account. And that's always appreciated if you want to buy us a game, you know, buy us a meal if we ever get to travel. And then lastly, the last thing that I just want to put out there, and again, feedback on Facebook and Twitch and Twitter and everything is always appreciated. I'm not saying that we are or aren't going to do anything, but I would love to see what you guys would want us to do for Extra Life. If you would want us to do it, it might be something that I was thinking, like, Michael does 6 hours, I do six, he does six, I do six. Like, we could stagger it out. Somebody even mentioned, like, they would love to maybe do a block for us. Like, that would be cool. Like, maybe a community member streams for, like, 2 hours. You know, like, we could figure things out that way if Extra Life is something that you guys would like to do. No, I don't know even what hospital we would be playing for at this point in time. It would just be a very small community event for us to hang out and play some games and not committing to any expectations. wanting to know what you guys would want to see. You know, it's again a community building thing, a way to maybe get us, you know, not that we're doing it for it, but to get us, you know, maybe somebody might trip upon Digital Days on Twitch because of Extra Life Day and get more exposure to while massively benefiting a great cause. And I'm not doing it for exposure, but to get more eyes on us, it would help us. Extra Life is to help the kids. It's not about raffle prizes or anything like that. It's just about donating to
a good cause,
to a hospital, probably would be a Chicago hospital at this point in time, just, you know, because we, you know, or a Detroit hospital, or maybe we find one in between. I don't know. Or maybe somebody says, hey, I'll donate this much to your cause if you play for this hospital, and that maybe we'll do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, something like that. So let us know if that's anything that you're interested in. It's truly a, you know, a fly by the seat of the pants kind of thing. It's coming up in like 2 months. So, but no promises, no guarantees. So other than that, we seem to have gone a little long this week. So I hope everyone has a great week. You got anything?
No, we might have a guest next week. Josh Langford is out of his slumber. He's thinking of coming on next week. If he doesn't pop up next week, it's his fault. It's not our fault. It's his fault.
That's at PJF Josh.
Yes. That's on him. He said he's willing to do it. We want to have him on. The most controversial man of all the video game nations. we're going to have him on next week unless something happens with our schedules.
Then we're getting close to episode 50, which is fascinating. We're getting close to 1 year, which is scary. So just let us know what you guys like, what kind of cool things you guys want to see, or any suggestions for any of that stuff. There's some stuff coming in the pipes that we can't wait to share with you, but at the same time, we're getting into a busy season. So, all right, talk to everyone next week.
Have a good one.